The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
So far, we've been talking about all that Jesus gives us or enables us to do so that we can have relationships in the church. He gives us all that we need for relationships. We saw that he enables us to be bold. He enables us to understand one another. He gives us the grace of accepting one another. And one last requirement that we can't leave a subject like relationships in the church without talking about is love. He gives us boldness, he gives us understanding, he gives us acceptance, and he gives us love. And the best example of that kind of love is found in Ephesians chapter 5, as Paul describes the love that husbands ought to have for their wives, the love that Christ has had for the church, and the love that is exemplified here is the love that ought to characterize all our relationships. Look at Ephesians chapter 5, beginning at verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. Three characteristics of love are found in this passage. The love that ought to characterize our relationships with one another. First, love is sacrificial. It's right there in verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. The Christian's love is a love that gives up. Gives up what? Gives up its own desires. Gives up its own preferences. Gives up its rights. Gives up its wants in order to seek the desires, the needs, the preferences of the one loved. And of course, that's the way Christ has loved us. Paul tells us in Philippians 2 that he did not count his equality with God as something to be grasped onto, but he was willing to empty himself and take the form of a servant and become obedient unto death. Christ's love is a giving up kind of love, a giving up of his own prerogatives in order to seek the welfare of those loved. And a husband's love, the Christian's love, must be a love that gives up. Now, a lot of husbands figure they've got to give up anyway. But that's not what Paul means. It's a little more positive than that. Now, in my job as a counselor and in the seminar work I do, I've been telling people for years and years and years that they have to love. And I've been telling husbands that they have to love their wives as Christ loved the church. They have to love their wives sacrificially. And I said it, but I didn't know whether I believed it. until several years ago when it came home to me in a powerful way. Our first child, our son, was born a year after my wife and I were married. And then we waited 8 years for our second child. And we really didn't think we'd be able to have any more children. And that was a very, very difficult period. But after 8 years, the Lord gave us another child. Well, a few months after the birth of our second child, my wife comes to me and says, "Now that we know how to do it again, why don't we have a third?" And I said, "Honey, we've had to wait 8 years. I've gotten old. I'm too old to have another child." She said, "But statistics show that families are waiting longer and longer before they have their children. So we're right in with the times. There are problems with having a wife who knows too much." I said, "Well, that's true, but if we have another child now, their children will not know their grandfather because I will be dead." And she said, "You don't know or didn't know any of your grandfathers or grandmothers for that matter, and you turned out okay." Then I gave her my best argument. I said, "You know how irritable I'm getting. And the older I get, the less patience I have, and the more irritable I am. You don't want your children to grow up with an irritable father, do you?" And she said, "Don't tell me that." She says, "In counseling, you're telling people every day they can change, and you can change." Well, what did I have left? All my arguments were shot down. All I had left was preference. I would just as soon not have had another child. There was no physical reason. There was no moral reason. There was no financial reason why we couldn't have another child. I just didn't want another child. Now, when you have that kind of a deadlock, who makes the decision? Paul says there is no decision. Love sacrifices. Love gives up. Love sets aside its interests in order to seek the interests of the other. 9 months later, Stacy was born. And am I glad my wife won that argument. For what a delight she has been to all of us. But you get the idea. You see, that's where it hit me. I've been telling people, "Oh, sure, husbands, you got to love your wives as Christ loved the church. Of course, you got to give up." And I thought all that meant is occasionally you won't play golf when you want to, so you can spend that time with your wife. Or maybe when you want to buy something for yourself, you'll spend that money instead for your wife, that kind of stuff. But when it really hit me, having another child, does it apply to even that? Yes, it does. Husbands, you've got to love in a love that gives up. Okay. Now, Paul here is talking about the husband's love for the wife. But that characteristic of love applies to all of us and all of our relationships. You must set aside your interests. Seek the interest of the one loved. Then Paul says that our love is not only sacrificial, it's also constructive. And that's found in verses 26 and 27.
Our love doesn't only give up, our love builds up. He talks about Christ. He says in verse 26, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. Now, Paul is saying that Christ didn't just die for the church. He continues to minister to the church. And he says that Christ is in the dry cleaning business. He's getting rid of the spots and wrinkles. That means he's getting rid of the imperfections. He died for the church, but now he continues to perfect the church so that at his second coming, the church will be a bride fit for the bridegroom, who is himself. So Christ's love doesn't stop with the sacrifice. Christ's love continues in the building up. The husband's love, your love, must be constructive. Now, there's an interesting parallel verse in Colossians. You may know that Colossians and Ephesians are parallel letters. Paul covers pretty much the same subject matter in both letters. And if you have trouble understanding what he's saying in one letter, you ought to look at the parallel passage in another, and it often amplifies what he's trying to say. But look at verse 19 of Colossians 3. This is the parallel passage. He says, "Husbands, love your wives, and do not be embittered against them." Interesting connection. Love them, don't be embittered. What's he saying? He's saying it's easy to get bitter when you confront your wife's fault. Now, let's broaden that. It's easy to become bitter when you encounter a brother's fault. Paul says, love, don't be embittered. My temptation when my wife does something wrong is to get bitter. When we lived in the house before the house we live in now, if we got to church on time, we had to leave at 9:15 on Sunday morning. Now, at this particular church, church was first and Sunday school was second. Now, some people don't mind being late for Sunday school, but it's embarrassing to be late for church. So if we were going to be on time, we had to leave at 9:15. Now, if I said that once to my wife, I said it 100, 200, 1,000 times. 9:15 comes. I'm in the car. My son is in the car. But my wife and daughters are nowhere in sight. And I say, where are they? They know we have to leave at 9:15. Where is she? And my son says, Dad, women, you know. We just do this kind of stuff. And I blow on the horn, you know, get out here! And maybe at about 9:20, the door opens, and my wife comes out, and she's got the coat half on, half off, and she's got this daughter, and the dress even buttoned up yet, and this one, and the hair is all a mess, and she's dragging this whole thing down into the car. And she pushes him into the car, and she's all upset. And I say, where were you? She says, I had to get them ready. I said, well, you should have started earlier. Well, she said, you don't know what it's like. And I said, all I know is we're going to be late. Okay, and we have this quiet and calm and prayerful ride to church. Now, maybe this never happened to you. My wife's got a problem. She's got an on-time problem, and I'm getting bitter. Now, I can't get bitter. Can't get bitter. Paul says here, I've got to build her up. My love has to be constructive. Okay? I've got to help. Well, I know I can help her by confronting her. Okay? I can help her by getting her an alarm clock, right? Well, the Lord taught me something.
Long about that time, my wife was working in Pioneer Girls in the church. And I think it was Monday. Every Monday she had to go to Pioneer Girls. And I got home late from work one day, about 6 o'clock. She had to leave at 6:30 to go to Pioneer Girls. So as soon as I got in, we sat down, ate supper in a hurry. And she had to leave. So I said, honey, don't worry about it. You just go. And I'll take care of everything. I'll put the kids in bed. I'll clean up the dishes. Just go. Don't worry about it. Well, she left. And I thought, well, all right, I'll put the kids in bed first. And I'll start with Stacy, who was then still in diapers. So I take Stacy into her room, and I put her down on the floor to change her diaper. And I open up the diaper, and I realize there's more here than I bargained for. So I say, honey, you just stay right here. Don't move, and I'll go get some towels and come back and clean up. Well, she not only didn't listen to me, she moved, and she decided that what was in the diaper might be fun to play with. Now, it never occurred to me that a rational human being would ever want to do something like that. But there she was, playing with the contents of the diaper, and she had decided to take a walk. So she was crawling around the floor, nice light blue carpet. And I could see the tracks. She had gotten to one wall and started to climb up the wall. Well, you can imagine the mess all over. So I yell for my son, Johnny, get in here, quick, I need your help. He gets in, I say, hold her, tie her down while I get some hot water and some soap and some more towels. So, to make a long story short, around 9 o'clock, I've just gotten the kids cleaned up and in bed. I haven't even gotten to the kitchen yet to start the dishes. And my wife comes home. And I look at her and I say, honey, you have no idea what it's like to take care of two little girls. The point is, I had no idea what it was like to take care of two little girls. And suddenly, I got a new perspective on our Sunday morning late for church problem. A big part of the problem was me. Jesus says in Matthew 7, before you take the speck out of your brother's eye, get the telephone pole out of your own eye. Before you look at your brother's problem, make sure you deal with your own problem first. Now, just get that picture. It's pretty hard to get close enough to somebody to see the speck in his eye if you've got this huge pole sticking out of your eye. I mean, you just can't get within 30 feet of them without hitting him in the head with that telephone pole that's coming out of your eye, okay? And if you swing your head around too much, you're going to whack him, you know, with this telephone pole that's coming out of your eye. That's the picture Jesus gives, you know? And it's a ridiculous picture. It's a hyperbole because he wants to get the point across. Okay? You can't deal with that little teeny speck in your brother's eye unless you deal with your own stuff first, your own sin first. So, if you want to love in a way that's constructive, you better deal with your own sin first. You better start with yourself. Now, after that, you may need to confront. You may need to pray. You may need to advise. You may need to encourage. I don't know what it's going to take to help that person you love, your wife here, to get over that problem, to get rid of those spots or wrinkles. But it's your job. It's your job to set up that program, to minister in a way that builds up. All right, there you see it. Our love is sacrificial. Our love is constructive. And a last point, and let me mention this quickly. Our love is constant. Our love doesn't stop. It continues. Look at what Paul says in verse 28. He says, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself.
Men are very protective of their bodies. I know when my dad was sick, everybody in the family knew it. You'd come home from school and mom would say, "Shh, dad's sick, okay, be quiet. No, don't make too much noise, be quiet." And everybody'd have to tiptoe around because dad was sick. Now, I suppose my mother got sick, but I don't remember it. I guess when she got sick, it was no big deal. She just kind of took it in stride. Okay, Paul is saying, we have to love our wives as our own bodies, and men do love their bodies. And they don't stop loving their bodies. Look at what he says in verse 29. For no one ever hated his own flesh. What's this stuff we need to learn to love ourselves? Paul says we never stop loving ourselves. We never hate our own flesh, but we nourish and cherish it just as Christ does the church. Just as we don't stop loving ourselves, so we can't stop loving our wives and loving one another. Now, as I get older, the problems with this body of mine become more and more apparent. Okay? I don't have a forehead anymore. I have a five head. I drink too much Pepsi, and it shows a little bit, okay? And my nose is too big. Of course, that's been there for a long time. But what happens with this stuff? Well, I don't smash my head because I'm losing hair. And I don't cut off my nose because it's too big. No. I think losing your hair is a little distinguished. Everybody knows that a big nose is a sign of great intelligence. And I'm content. Okay. See, you turn liabilities into assets. You don't stop hating your own body. And Paul says, we can't stop loving one another. Now, this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where love is foundational. If you want to bring stability into the home, then you better learn to love constantly. If you want to bring stability to the church, you better learn to love constantly. You can't be put off by the sins of the other person. When that angry word is spoken to you, you've got to respond in love. When that hateful, vengeful, spiteful word or action is taken, you have to respond with gentleness and kindness and love. And that brings stability to the home. That brings stability to the church. Love. Love sacrificially, love constructively, and love constantly. God bless you.